This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, we are in conversation with Jonathan Khan, Managing Director and Co-Founder of ERS Energy, as we understand how this turnkey solar EPCC and retail rooftop provider has grown its business beyond Malaysia's shore. When you started in 2009, there were just a few of you, right, about 10 players, and today we have over 100 players. What makes you stand out?
Well, I think just one of the key things was starting early allowed us to have a deeper depth and understanding of the industry and the technology. And continuing to evolve with the technology was also important because the new product offerings from the manufacturers and how the whole solar industry moved to become more efficient. Keeping on our toes and keeping up with technology was probably why we stood the test of time for 12 years now.
That's why I'm wondering, does starting being an early adopter, early mover, really an advantage here? Because as you say, the technology is evolving so fast. It's easy to be disrupted, right? It's easy for other people to come in and take over, isn't it? So there is no advantage of being first in the market, right?
Well, there is because if we being first in the market, we actually get a lot more depth, and that is very important. I think ERS, we pride ourselves as a engineering company and specifically in solar engineering. So having a good understanding of how it works, designing the best system, which then optimizes our cost structure, actually gives us a competitive advantage. Secondly, because as we started early, we have access to a little bit more capital. We have a little bit more track record, especially when you're in an infant industry like solar. Track record actually helps a lot. And when you're dealing with customers or even finances, I think they like to see that. So that gave us a little bit of an advantage.
Tell me about depth of engineering, or how much depth is acquired over a period of time.
Well, it's because to be a turnkey contractor, just looking at the solar bit, which is very fresh, very new, then you need to move on into the more legacy systems, like supporting with the grid and the high voltage network and how the legacy and traditional electricity grid actually functions. Getting an understanding of it and also getting to know our utility company better and their set of operating parameters. I think all that takes time and again, the focus on the depth.
Let's focus on the numbers then. 2020, you installed about 1,500 commercial and residential PV rooftops, about 25 to 30 megawatts in Malaysia. How did you do in 2021?
2021 was, I think, similar. Because 2020 was the start of a very challenging period for all of us. And we were locked down and we couldn't reach out to our customers. We couldn't have face-to-face meetings. Thankfully, we have technology. The company is already on the cloud computing and Google Suite applications that we could then immediately switch and try and connect with our customers to get in more sales. But of course, there were many customers which were commercial and industrial clients that had to shut down. And so a lot of projects were also postponed.
So really it stagnated simply because there were lockdown measures, there were issues about reaching out and distribution of the client. But essentially, would you say demand was there? Is this pent-up demand that's going to be translated in 22, 23, 24?
Correct. There will be pent-up demand, especially when the manufacturing line picks up. But a very interesting trend was during the lockdown, we noticed there were more inquiries on the residential sector. Okay. And because everyone started working from home, there was more consumption at home. People were more focused on their utility bills. And so we had quite a spike in residential inquiries and sales. And so we were also very happy to support.
Break down for me the residential, industrial and commercial rooftop installations. Tell me, how much does each one contribute to the business?
To the business. I think it's slightly under 10%.
For residential?
Well, for all. We have what we call our retail business, which is all the solar PV systems which we put on rooftops. That would be residential, commercial and industrial. And they contribute about 10% of our revenue. The other business unit that we have would be on the large scale solar segment, which contributes significantly to our business number.
So that contributes 90% then? Would that be fair?
Yes, correct.
Tell me how margins look like when you compare these retail rooftops versus the large scale ones. How do the margins compare and contrast? Profit margins?
Yeah, so I think the rooftop segment, the margins are about double of what the large scale segment is, because the volume in the large scale segment is huge. But solar panel prices are pretty transparent these days. You can easily get the prices off the internet. And so large scale customers, they would do their research, they'll be more guided, they would talk to the manufacturers directly. Whereas for the retail segment, we do have to keep stock and we have to manage. So we do command a higher margin on the rooftop business.
Well, that's the challenge, isn't it? Because 90% of your business, which is industrial, they're going to put a lot of pressure on you on the margin. And is that why there's this concerted shift to drive a bit more retail to the mix in 23, 24, 25? So you said 1090 at the moment. What does it look like in terms of mix in 22, 23 onwards?
I think it's going to be super fluid. Just recently, the Malaysian government has launched the Malaysian Renewable Energy Roadmap. I think they identified through Sustainable Energy Development Authority, at least the potential of 210 gigawatts. So that's 210,000 megawatts of solar farm potential in Malaysia and another 42 gigawatts of rooftop solar potential in Malaysia. This is so that we can work towards achieving our renewable energy targets in 2025 to 2035. With these very aggressive targets, I think even by that ratio, the ground mount volume is at least five times bigger than the retail rooftop segment. So we're going to still go ahead with a two-prong approach. We will always go for any opportunity that arises, be it rooftop or large scale, and we'll always do our best. So I think the ratio could change up from year to year, but I would say like the traditionally the gross development value of all these projects out there up until year 2035 is looking promising.
But back on the financials, when you talk about margins of the business, you were just now saying your retail rooftop margins about double the margins of industrial, but industrial is about 90% of your total renewable energy capacity generated company-wide, enterprise-wide, what your margins of the business are.
Yeah, so it hovers around year on year, but I think it would average out at about 7 to 10% is what we're looking at as a average performance.
Because when I see some of your peers who are listed, Samaiden, SolarVest, their gross margins about 20%, net margins sit about 8 to 10%. Are you sitting around there? Because looking at your records in 2017, your margins were about 3 to 4%, correct me if I'm wrong. So what has driven that improvement in the net margin then?
Okay, well, I think for our peers, we actually have to look at the nature of the contract. So there were many contracts, even for ourselves, that we could have entered just taking on partial procurement of the EPC project. And there will be situations where the owners or the developers would rather purchase the equipment themselves from the manufacturers. And then we would then take them on and install them and build them for it. So that kind of project where we only do a partial procurement, that would have a higher margin as compared to doing a full turnkey project. So the 3 to 4% one was a one of our dip because we took on the entire scope of the EPC works overseas. There were painful lessons which were expensive to learn, and that's why we came through with a much lower margin. But I'm happy to say that then in 2018, 2019, 2020, up to 2021, we have been improving our margins because we make mistakes. We then learn and we improve our cost structure again. We learn how to better execute projects. So our margins have been climbing, and yeah, happy to say that it falls back into the 7 to 10% region.
So lessons learned. Are you saying one of the lessons learned was that you have to be a bit more selective about the type of services you offer within the overall contract, that sometimes turnkey isn't the full answer, is that correct? That you're going to be selective now?
Yes, I think identifying pitfalls in execution was the key one. I think whether we want to take on certain segment of the contract, that would be down to a negotiation with the owner. But again, I think lessons learned is more on the execution bit of it, and that's where our track record actually really helped.
In the end, right, many people say that this solar EPC business, especially with 100 over players, this is a price taker market, isn't it? It's not market maker, correct?
Correct.
So do you expect margins to be under pressure then? This 8 to 10% margins that we are enjoying now, this is going to be a thing of a past very soon, isn't it? We're going to see further compression though?
Yeah, we will. But I think we've been there before. Having been in this market for 12 years now, it's cyclical. We've seen the pressure come. But I think as an engineering company and as a service provider, we have had a lot of repeat customers. And we're proud of that, I guess, because the customers can see the value of what we bring, including after-sales service, which is very important. And we are not too afraid once it gets very, very, very competitive, which it is now, as you rightly pointed out. But we just got got to, you know, hold true to ourselves, have a very, very good understanding of how we're doing our business and our cost structure. And I think we're going to get through fine.
You hark back to the days of 2016 when the government removed the FIT scheme. And what we saw at the time was 150 players immediately, to one third of them basically closed shop, and it basically came down to 100. Were you contemplating the shutdown at that time?
No, actually, we were contemplating on what should be the next step in consultation with the government. You know, how can we move forward? Because I always believe we were moving and transitioning into a disruptive age. Until today, you know, we were disrupting everything that was traditional. And I think the energy sector is one of it. And we haven't seen the full brunt of the disruption yet. It is going to come. I think with the energy storage technologies maturing, with electric vehicles going to be very, very exciting in the next couple of years, even in Malaysia. So all this is going to transform the energy industry, and I'm very excited to be a part of it. And that's what that was the view we took since 2016. Also,
but how do you make sure the government doesn't repeat the same mistake of 2016, right, where we saw essentially an implosion of the solar industry in 2016? How do we avoid that again?
Well, I think the government did quite well, to be honest, because the FIT system was a crutch that was given to the industry for them to start. And why I say that is because I look at our neighboring countries, and there are a lot of examples to take from. They had very sporadic deployment of solar in their countries, where they will have a 1 or 2 year boom and then it will totally collapse. And we're not talking about 30% of the companies shutting down. We're talking maybe between 50 to 80% of them. And so they only had, you know, one hit wonder kind of policies. Whereas in Malaysia, they have been growing us.
So pushing you on that, which is the new net energy metering scheme, right? Many of your peers and competitors are really calling for the government to expand the allocation up to 3,000 megawatts for the net offset virtual aggregation NOVA program. At the moment, this is 10x what is actually currently being allocated. Why do you think the government has not been willing to open up more?
Well, I think the policymakers need to consult with the technology and infrastructure side of things to make sure that the grid can handle it. Technically, do we want a repeat of in the 90s where we had a nationwide blackout if there was just too high penetration of solar? I think we need to balance the growth of the solar industry with safety and national security. And with the recent launch of the renewable energy roadmap, I think there is definitely going to be space for that 3,000 megawatts additional, because the government has listed a 2025 target.
So you think it is inevitable, right, that 3,000 megawatts will be awarded?
Yeah.
And so if we focus on then the growth of residential, I want to get your point. And I think you have pivoted yourself quite nicely, 10% really being residential and retail focus. I do want to ask you whether there is really much potential in residential, because what we are seeing is that while there is a huge demand, the nature of residential units has also changed, isn't it? We are seeing a lot more people move to condos, flats and apartments. We're seeing much fewer semi-detached terrace houses. So doesn't this then dampen the prospects of retail-based solar programs?
Yes, it does. But I think we shouldn't stop ourselves there. I think there's just so much more to achieve. Like if condo or apartment dwellers would like to participate in the whole solar program, they're actually looking at virtual power, where you can actually buy green power where it's generated offsite. You know, there is research being done on how to apply blockchain into this energy calculation and billing, where you actually really can a whole condo unit residences come together, put up a solar farm somewhere in, I don't know, somewhere far away where the land is cheap, but actually consume the power virtually in KL. So I think the possibilities are endless, and I'm not too downbeat about it.
I wonder if the challenge isn't actually the technology or the structure of residential, but actually the financing element, because, you know, installing a solar panel could cost about 20,000 to 50,000 ringgit. And I know you have spent quite a lot of time building partnerships with, you know, banks like UOB and Hong Leong to really kind of improve the financing structure of solar programs. What does it take to get people to accelerate the adoption of solar panels? Because it is still relatively quite low in Malaysia, isn't it?
Well, yes, correct. Two things. One would be very unpopular is when electricity tariffs go up. Right.
Which didn't happen recently, because I think the government has decided to stagnate TNB's electricity, isn't it?
Correct. Because actually it was a review period that came up, and they, I think, have suspended that review period. But it would come once things pick up. Secondly, is obviously when the technology gets even more affordable. So I think both of it boils down to dollars and cents, right? As you rightly said about the people unable to install it for their own homes. There are programs now called the Renewable Energy Certificate, RECs, where you can actually buy a unit of electricity, but then also have that certificate attached to give it a sort of renewable energy certification kind of element. So I think the authorities are also exploring this to see what they can do for people who can't actually put the solar panels up on their roof.
But in the end, right, we are just relying on the government, isn't it? Until the government basically takes all these bold actions, until banks embrace it fully, because to be fair, there are one or two banks who are bold, but the rest aren't really taking the effort, it will remain a niche product, isn't it? And that will be a challenge for all you players.
Well, with the banks, actually, I'm happy to share that they're all very focused on ESG right now. And I think there is a worldwide push to stop financing for dirty energy and go for renewable or green energy. So I think the banks are participating as much as they can and doing their bits. And yes, I think in a lot of sectors and industry, especially when they're up and coming, it will be policy driven. There is no doubt. And that's why we need the government's support. And it is our then duty to work with the government to ensure that we have a very optimized policy.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Jonathan Khan, Managing Director and Co-Founder of ERS Energy. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill, we have Jonathan Khan, Managing Director and Co-Founder of ERS Energy. He's in the hot seat as we go through the challenges and opportunities in the solar industry. Jonathan, would it make sense for you to actually build and construct your own panels? Because that's the main cost item, isn't it? 60% of EPC cost is the solar panel itself.
Correct. It is. And it wouldn't make sense for us to do it because first, the raw material for making solar panels are silicon, and that is not something Malaysia is a prime producer of. Secondly, I think trying to compete with the world's largest factory called China is going to be challenging. And that's why we think it wouldn't be prudent to go up against them, but instead to work with them. So there have been numerous studies and reports every year issued by different associations and bodies where they would actually rank the solar panel manufacturers and its bankability and its financial standings. And so we only then work with the tier one manufacturers to ensure that we're okay.
Where do you see the technology advancements in solar panel and how will that translate into cost in the future? Because early on you were saying that there's still quite a lot of room to see improvements in solar panel technology. How does it translate in cost? How much does it improve efficiency?
Okay, so when we started ERS in 2009, solar panels are sold by the watt ratings. So it's a per watt basis. Okay, and one panel at that time was about 180 watts, but they were selling at $2 per watt. Today we're looking at 27 cents per watt.
So 10 times. More than 10 times.
Yeah. 10x. Slightly more than 10% of what it used to cost. And the same panel size, now we can actually get it for about 430 watts. So the same size panel has doubled in capacity of the power it can produce, and it only costs 10% of what it did 12 years ago. So these are the advances that we're looking at, and it's mainly driven in China.
But there are short-term pressures, isn't it, in moving up solar panel prices because, as you said, raw material costs like polysilicon prices are increasing. So how do we manage and control those costs then? Since you are not relatively the largest player in the market, you can't really command price or economies of scale.
Yeah, well, not on solar panels. That is something we have to forecast. That's something we work with our panel manufacturers to understand. What we need to do is to time the project to see when we actually require the panels, and then we actually have to price it in to the developer in our EPC contract.
How do you diversify your solar panel providers? How many do you have at the moment? How do you manage the risk?
So as I mentioned, we work with the tier one manufacturers. So we have about five of them that we're in close contact with that we propose to our clients. So I think it's always a two-pronged approach where we offer these models and these brands to our customers. And it is actually also up to the customer to choose which one they're more comfortable with. Because in terms of offerings, technology and warranties, they're all rather similar.
Yeah, so solar panel is a global problem. But Malaysia also is afflicted with the relatively higher cost of installation of solar panels, right? For two main reasons. One is that you guys are also responsible for the connection to the grid, as well as foreign labor concerns. I mean, foreign labor concerns have have been going on for a long time for you guys. It's been exacerbated as a result of the pandemic. How are you managing the issues? Let's focus on the first one, foreign labor.
So I think on the rooftop segment side, we have mostly in-house technicians. We have about 50 of them that has been with us for many years. They're all locals, even from East Malaysia, and very happy to be working with this group. On top of that, when we need external support, which when we have a lot of deployments, we do engage subcontractors, and then they would then be supplying their set of labor. That then also goes into our large-scale solar farms where we work with our subcontractors, and they would be bringing in the labor. So far, we haven't been adversely affected by the shortage in labor, and it's good also that it builds local capability for our local people to install these panels.
In the end, when you expand in the likes of Philippines and Vietnam, would they also be a source of talent? Because if you can't find Malaysian talent to install your panels, would markets like Philippines and Vietnam be your source of engineers and installation panel technicians?
Yes, they would be. And we've actually been looking for internal sort of transfer where we can then send our Malaysian people over to Vietnam or Philippines, and likewise for them to come over here. We would have to sort out the professional passes for them. But yeah, I think it would be a nice exchange and a good source of talent.
In the end, right, it is an issue of scale, right? You do need to grow to a certain extent. When you think about your size of the business, would you say you're subscale? And what does it take to hit a certain scale for the business?
I think right now for us, we are at the highest financial performance that we've ever been over the past 12 years. And I think we will intend to grow as outlined earlier on the market size that will be available, not just in Malaysia, but in the Southeast Asia.
But you need
Asia
to grow
region.
Faster than market. That's the question.
And that's why we only can quantify the market in Malaysia. But right now, because we have our revenue mix each year, they swing between 60-70% local to 60-70% international sales, and I think it's hard to quantify. We would ride with the market, but I'm not sure if we can outgrow the market, because this solar market is really, really, I would say, exploding.
And when you talk about outgrow the market, I think key to basically outgrowing or outperforming the market is basically being a winning bidder for LSS, isn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong. You were, executing projects on LSS1. You have built two facilities there. You also were involved in LSS2. What happened in LSS4? Were you involved?
Yes, we are continuing to bid for projects. We've participated in a few, waiting for the results. We are securing a few LSS4 projects as we speak. But I think because we generally do not make announcements of the projects that we've secured, so then it has been rather difficult to just pin down.
Help me contrast the hit rate and the success rate between LSS1 and LSS4. Is it harder now to secure LSS-related contracts because of the intense competition?
It is. LSS4 will be the hardest, I would say, to secure contracts. Well, I think one is down to the volatility of the market. I think we are also a bit more risk adverse because we have had painful lessons. And so we see the pitfalls. We are telling ourselves, whether these are risks that we want to take, or, I think we see a lot more aggressive competitors out there right now.
And I'm wondering whether you eventually have to walk away. If you're saying currently your margins are at about 7% and 90% of it is industrial-related kind of applications, you're going to hit to a point very soon where you will walk away from projects, isn't it? You will find some of these projects not appealing, right? And are you doing that already?
Yes, we are. So I think because there are clients that appreciate what we can bring to the table, and there are some who are maybe under more commercial pressure, and they would just like to go for the more competitive guys. And so we do have to employ that strategy.
Now, let's just talk beyond Malaysia. Margin-wise, you say Malaysia is about 7-10%. How does it compare with the markets that you're expanding to, right? Indonesia, Singapore, you've now entering Philippines and Vietnam. Contrast what the margins are and how they look differently between the different markets and regions.
I would say they're the same because we're applying the same principles. And again, like I said, our same cost structure into these markets. Because once we go to the other in foreign countries, we are competing with foreign companies. And we're talking about the ones from China, from Europe, which are international EPCs. There is also an American EPC PC that is in the market. So we carry the Malaysian flag to try and win these projects over. But we see that competition with them is as equally stiff as competition back home in Malaysia.
And your differentiator with them is price, isn't it? You don't have the advantage that you have in Malaysia where you have the reputation. If you want to penetrate these new markets, it will be on price. So it will put pressure on margins, isn't it?
Yes, one is price, I think, especially with the Chinese EPCs, definitely on price. But on the other hand, I would like to think, I haven't validated it, that we have home ground advantage because we are a Southeast Asian country. We kind of have the same culture. We can speak sort of in the same frequency as compared to European, American or mainland China companies that have a different set of culture compared to us.
Okay, well, let's see whether that cultural advantage does translate to interest margins. I want to then push you on this question about financing of the business, because it is relatively a heavy capex business for yourself. Do you think going forward, financing will be done outside Malaysia? You know, your operations will be in Malaysia, across Southeast Asia, but where you will secure your financing and your cost of funding is actually going to be in more developed markets like Singapore.
Yes, I think there is a big possibility. There are actually also LSS projects which are now funded not by Malaysian commercial banks, and we have worked with developers that were funded through other Asian banks in this region.
Tell me then, what does Malaysia contribute to the business then in 3-4 years? You have laid out a very aggressive expansion plan across Southeast Asia. How much will Malaysia contribute to the business in 3-4 years? What's the vision for yourself?
I think Malaysia is still going to be home. It's going to be HQ, headquarters. I think the ease of doing business, the talent pool that we have, we must do everything we can to retain it. I think I'm sure you've heard of the Great Resignation recently, and cost of doing business is going up, that's for sure. And that's why that's when we pivot on our international contracts to even out. A lot of our procurement was also in USD. So I think generally Malaysia is going to be where we're going to be based off, and we would make full use of it.
Talking about Great Resignation, you resigned from your cushy job in private equity and you decided to start in your living room with a friend, I think about 14, 15 years ago. Any regrets?
Yeah. Oh, no, none. I think the journey has been exceptional. I would do it all over again. There's no regrets so far.
Would you sell out?
Hasn't crossed my mind because I don't think I'm someone that can sit around and do nothing. So it's not going to work.
Well, time will tell. On that note, Jonathan, thanks for joining us and congratulations on being named top nominee in the Master Entrepreneur category of the EY Entrepreneur of the Year 2021 Malaysia Awards. That's all the time we have for today on The Breakfast Grill. Jonathan Khan, Managing Director and Co-Founder of ERS Energy. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.